Career Development with Tony Champion.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your humble host. Make sure to check out www.azuredevops.show for the past episodes and show notes. And excited that the user groups are continuing to truck on, and a lot of people are taking me up on my open offer to speak virtually at any of your .NET user groups. It's a lot of fun. So if you're part of a .NET user group, I'd love to get on your schedule. And if you're tuning in for the first time to this podcast, the Azure DevOps podcast is for developers who are shipping software with Microsoft technologies. And my goal for all of you, for all development teams, is that you're able to move fast and deliver consistent quality and run your system with confidence. And if you have any specific issues you'd like help with, well, that's what we do as an architecture company here at ClearMeasure, to advise you and help you deliver better results. I'm excited about today's guest, a longtime friend, Tony Champion. He is a software architect with over 20 years of experience developing with Microsoft technologies, and as the president of Champion DS, his own firm, and its lead software architect, he remains active in the latest trends and technologies, creating custom solutions on the Microsoft platform. Tony's also an active participant in the community as an 8-year recipient of the Microsoft MVP Award. He's an international speaker, a published author, and a blogger and podcaster himself. Tony, how are you, sir? Welcome to the show.
Good. Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. And by the way, you can find Tony on Twitter at Tony Champion. So Tony, we've known each other for a long time, but for the listeners who maybe aren't existing followers or whatnot, you're a longtime consultant, but what does that mean? A quick rundown of what your career has been so that people can get to know you a little bit.
So I started off, as I said, 20 years ago, came out of school and went up to Dallas and started working for a company there, and worked for as a developer for probably about a year and a half before moved back to Houston, really just to be closer to family and such. And when I came down, I got offered a 3-month project through a consulting company to come in and do some work. So it was something new to me because I hadn't done the whole consulting thing. So I came in and spent the 3 months working on that. And then the customer liked me so much, they extended it and kept extending it and turned it into a 3-year gig. After that kind of finally rolled out, I started looking at things and decided that really a lot of what the company that hired me to do, that I could kind of do a lot of that myself. And I found I liked the idea of being able to kind of move from project to project. So, fast forward the 15, 16, 17 years since then, it's really just been a path of jumping from project to project, from company to company. I've got the chance to work with a lot of amazing people and a lot of amazing developers and teams over the years. And it affords me the flexibility to kind of keep things fresh and new and not really get bogged down on one project for too terribly long. So that's kind of the gist of it, really.
Awesome. And you have recently started a new podcast called Developers Road. Tell us about that. What's the focus of the new show?
Yeah. So I've been sitting on the idea for a while, called the Developers Road, and the concept is simple behind it. There are a ton of devs out there, especially junior devs, but really senior devs, and anybody that's been in this industry for any amount of time that see the leaders that are in the industry, kind of see them out there. They see them on Twitter. They see them on speaking circuits. They see, they see them all over the place. And there's a lot of questions about, how do I get to do that? Or, what made them so successful that I'm sitting here listening to them? And there's a lot of questions around that. So the idea of the podcast really is to take a look at and talk to just leaders in the industry and really sit down and have a conversation with them, kind of about their history, you know, kind of the turns they made, the things that worked, the things that didn't, but then a lot of, you know, just what makes them successful at what they do and what they think, more importantly, what developers and such should be looking at. The podcast is supposed to launch the October 26th. And what I'm doing for that is I'll actually, on that launch day, we'll have seven smaller episodes with where I'm talking to seven different industry leaders. And it's asking the same question, really. In 2020, what is the one thing developers should be looking at for their career? And it's entertaining. So far, I've recorded four of them and I've gotten four completely different answers. So it's fun to listen to people and listen to these leaders kind of give you their insights of what worked for them and what the what developers need. And, you know, I find myself taking notes. I mean, I said, I've gone through the, luckily everybody who's going to be in launch week is also coming back for another, a second longer interview. And so I've had the chance to sit down with, you know, these four people so far, and I've got a few more, you know, I'm working on that. They've all had different paths. They've all kind of just, you know, found different ways to be successful, but they, I mean, it's been interesting. I mean, I've been taking notes like crazy. I get the benefit of going back and editing the shows and, you know, taking notes as it goes along. It's like, oh man, I would never have considered looking at things like that. So that's kind of the whole point of the podcast, is just really to sit down and let's start having these conversations and seeing where, you know, where these people can help out, you know, basically the next generation or even the current generations of developers when it comes to building out their careers and such. So it's been entertaining so far. We'll see. As I said, we're launching on the 26th, and which I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but I'm assuming we'll probably be out by then, and we'll see what people think of it.
Pretty close. Well, you'd mentioned your own path of consulting and being able to go from project to project and get that variety. Yeah, I've seen that. Most of my career has been in the consulting space. I've seen that too, that, and this goes for whether or not you're an independent consultant selling yourself or whether you work for a consulting company. Just by being a consultant, you go from it. You might get, you know, on the slow side, four projects in per year and sometimes more. But if you work for an internal IT department, you may get, you know, one project every other year. And so it's a different pace, a different level of variety.
Right. Most certainly. And it's for me, it's really worked. The downside of it is that you don't have that comfort level that sometimes I miss of knowing that, okay, it's just, you know, I'm settling in this project I'm gonna be on for the next year or 2 years or 3 years. And you never really know what the next turn is gonna be. So there is that. You know, there is risk with it for being an independent consultant, but really just the uncertainty of it really is a kind of a downside. But there's a ton of upside. And as I said, it's a lot of fun. And it's given me a chance to grow really as a developer, because it's one of the biggest things, especially over the last, say, 5-10 years that I really started focusing on, was the different groups I would roll in and work with. Everybody has a different take on how they do their development, their life cycle, how they approach problems and such. And by, you know, spending the time to pay attention and really focus and learn from other people. And I mean, it could be the senior leads on projects, or it could be the most junior dev who just came out of college. I mean, you learn so much about how to be an effective developer just by paying attention to what works for other people and what doesn't. So it's been a big part of how my career has grown, just from absorbing that as I got a chance to go along.
Yeah, that's a good point. Learning something from everybody you encounter. So with the new podcast, this is in line with it. But if we piqued some people's interest and they're thinking, okay, how do I develop my career? Maybe I am interested in consulting, and I'm kind of dividing the two of just consulting as a way of working. And then there's the independent consulting, which is you're on the hook for selling your own project.
Right.
Right. So how should people think about that, or maybe get into that, those fields?
So when I got started, the interesting thing that I came across when I started looking at it is coming from a computer science background, I didn't have a whole lot of business knowledge. And so looking at the aspect of trying to grow a company seemed too large for me at the time. I didn't know how to market a company. I didn't know how to build, you know, these relationships. I didn't know the ins and outs of it. And it seemed too big to tackle. But at the time, I'd got myself involved in the North Houston.net user group and was on the board of directors there. And I came across it's when I first really started being able to interact with the leaders in the industry and the community and such, you know, the speakers, the, you know, the authors and things like that. And I learned real quick that I might not know how to grow business, but I know I can grow and market myself. And that's really where it took off, is to be able to, until then, my consulting career had probably more downs than it did ups. And, you know, I'd find stuff every once in a while, but there was a ton of hustle. And then once I kind of embraced that aspect of marketing myself and growing my own authority and brand inside the community, then things shifted over that first year. With that first year, I ended up with a Microsoft MVP, and that thing started kind of going from there. And then it shifted where I don't go on interviews a lot for projects and things. Is, you know, I have more people reaching out to me on certain things. And that's kind of what probably gave me the ability to stay an independent consultant. That whole process works if you're consulting for a firm or if you're just, you know, in a regular, you know, development position and moving around in the career, you know, in the industry, having that brand and that authority that you build up carries you. So that's where it came down to is I didn't know how to build a business and market a business. I could market myself. Or I thought I could. I've learned an awful lot since what it was going to take. But, and so that's kind of the difference there, really. I mean, I feel like if you're going to go down the consultant path, you're selling yourself, you're marketing, you know, your own abilities and such. And so the best way to do that is to not be just a name on a piece of paper. And, so when they go and they Google you, they can find things and they can see what you've done and they can see what you speak on, what you're passionate about, what you write about, and that type of thing.
Good point. You mentioned the user group, which those exist so that people can share knowledge and share experience and everybody gets better. I've heard it said that experts teach, because if you don't teach, there's nobody in the world that'll even recognize that you have any expertise. Seems to be that what you've done.
You know, I honestly look at it a slightly different approach, and that is that teachers become experts. And the reason I say that, and I've talked to people about before, is that to teach somebody something, you don't have to be an expert at it. Now, granted, if you're an expert in the subject, you know, you can, there's definitely a broader depth and range that you can bring to it, especially when people start asking questions and things like that. But if you just take a small little finite piece of, you know, coding, whatever it is, you know, I've been working with Microsoft Graph lately. So, incorporating Microsoft Graph and ASP.NET Core, it's not a huge subject matter. There's not a ton that needs to go there, but if you've done any project and you know it, if you want to teach it, you need to learn a little bit more about it, and don't necessarily have to be an expert on it, but you can turn around and teach that. And then to get better at teaching, you learn more and more. And the end result is you look down the road and like, hey, I became an expert in that. That's what happened with me with Silverlight. It's when I got bit and started was with Silverlight. There was the Silverlight forums that were outside of MSDN. They had their own forums at the time. And I had done a little bit of Silverlight and wanted to learn more about it. So what I did was I started going to the forums and started looking for questions. You know, people, how do you make this happen? I had no idea, but I'd just sit down and at night or at lunch and figure out how to do it and then post the answer if somebody hadn't done it already. And I just kept doing that. And, 6 months down the road, all of a sudden I have a Microsoft MVP because I'm an expert in the community where I wasn't, you know, at that point I've spoken several times on it. And it wasn't that I was an expert, especially at the time. It was just the fact that I was sharing the knowledge that I had. And by doing that, you find the missing pieces in the knowledge that you have. You know, the first time you go to teach something to somebody and they say, hey, well, what about this? And you're like, I've got no idea. But if you figure it out, then you just keep getting better. So
yeah,
I feel like your teachers become your experts. And because, and that's one of the things I've seen when people, when I've talked to people like at user groups and like, what I'd love to, I want to try to speak, but I'm not an expert. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to know whatever your subject matter is. And the being an expert will come the more you teach it.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And you mentioned the Microsoft MVP. You've received several of those awards. And for anyone who's heard of that, but it's kind of a mystery, you can't go put in an application. It's not a certification for a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional Award. Microsoft noticed what you were doing and gave you an award.
Correct.
And you were just kind of doing your thing. And yep. You ended up learning a heck of a lot and becoming one of the top minds in that technology. And you were sharing what you knew with the user group community.
So, that's how it started.
So if somebody else is looking to kind of do what you did, build their authority, what kinds of things could they start doing now?
Well, it's simple. Honestly, it's you do the same thing that I started back then is just, you know, start with what you know and kind of start teaching what you can. And it, typically, it's hard to jump into a new tech and say, look, I'm going to, and I've been thrown into this a couple of times in my career where I was speaking at a conference and somebody backed out of a talk and they're like, hey, you know, here's this React talk. I need you to get it. And at the time I hadn't touched React, I'm like, sure, you know, and I'll, you know, spend a little bit of time trying to pick it up, but it comes across that you don't know it. It's hard to teach something you don't know at all. So you find out what you're working on, typically what you're currently working on, or if you've got a passion that you project that you're really doing. And then you still go from there. If you're a WPF dev and you look at, you know, hey, I had this big problem I had to overcome and I finally figured it out. Well, then great. There's a blog article for you. Or there's a YouTube video for you, or, you know, jump on Stack Overflow and look for people who have the same problem who didn't get it answered and answer that for them. And it's simply a matter of the great thing about our industry is the community. You can't be successful in this career without the community, because there's just not enough market or budget at software companies to give you all the detail that you need. I mean, Microsoft could have tech writers and such, and they're still not going to cover everything you need to know as a developer. You're going to come into issues, the tech moves too fast, or you're working on tech that's older and you still need access to not the latest versions of the documentation, but something earlier. So you have to have that community to build it out. And so all it takes to be part of that community is simply to show up and start sharing what you know. And it could be very, very little, it could be a lot. And then once you start getting your feet wet on that, it's just a simple matter of kind of growing, taking it to the next step, you know, and looking. You'll find that as you start sharing things, you'll find either from questions that people ask, asking a response to your stuff, or just by asking your own questions, because you're looking at stuff and like, well, this works, but what happens if I need to do this? You'll find your content will start to flow once you kind of get in the groove of things. It just takes a little bit of consistency, and then you start seeing things a little bit differently. And then before you know it, you're considered an authority, an expert in whatever it is you're talking about, because you've been there and you've shown up for the community for X amount of time.
Yeah.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
Now, are there any... besides yours, are there any other coaching programs that you're aware of that developers who want to go down this path can make use of?
I have seen a couple out there. I can't think of what they are off the top of my head, that do a couple of different things. Now, as far as my thoughts and approach on things, I feel it's a fairly unique, just from the standpoint of, you know, I feel to be successful and kind of grow your career, the quickest way to do it is by getting involved in the community and kind of growing your authority within the community. And on top of that, you know, it's good karma, right? I mean, you're building your authority by helping others, and that's never, you know, a bad thing. But as far as I know, from what I've seen out there's not a whole lot like kind of the thought, you know, kind of what I'm looking at. And so we'll see kind of how it goes. Been working a lot. I started thinking about this, honestly, a couple of years ago. I speak every year at a career week for my kids' middle school. And so one of the parts that I do for when I speak to them is talk about personal branding for middle schoolers and high schoolers, and how basically looking at colleges and such, how more and more colleges are not just taking the applications at face value, but are hiring companies to do social media, you know, to do Google searches on you and social media searches on you, and how you can basically work that to your advantage by, you know, stepping off the page and having more out there. And at some point I was talking after a talk, I believe I was actually in Austin. I was talking to a young developer that came up that gave me his resume, was looking out for things. And my question to him was like, well, this is awesome. You know, what else have you done? You know, what do you have out there that I can go take a look at? Cause honestly, I didn't want to read everything that was on the page. I'm like, and that started a conversation. And then after that, I'm like, you know, there's something to that, that more people need to know, is how to build your reputation, your personal brand, whatever you want to call it, your authority, beyond what's on your resume. So that's kind of the approach that I'm looking at doing and trying to kind of flesh out. So we'll see how it goes.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, with somebody with this many years of experience on the Microsoft platform as you have, the obvious question is, what's the current state of the .NET stack? Where do you see it going? What are you paying attention to these days?
Well, actually, so we have the .NET Conf is coming up in November, I think the 10th or the 12th. I'm not sure on the dates. Where you have .NET 5 coming out, right? Where .NET 5 is basically the full circle of getting .NET Core moved into a single .NET stack. And I've been playing around this concept of a branding concept called the modern .NET developer, honestly, recently, that for some new material I have coming out. Because if you look at the .NET stack, I think it's in a great spot, but it's different than what people were used to. Back in the day, if you're a .NET developer, you're a WinForms developer or a WPF developer or a Silverlight developer or, you know, UWP developer. And with .NET being cross-platform now, with .NET sitting behind so much on the Azure stack, with .NET sitting behind things like Xamarin or Uno, what it takes to be a successful .NET developer is actually quite vast if you really want to get good at it, because you have to know that you can do .NET development across so many pieces of the architecture now. So mm-hmm. It's pretty exciting, honestly. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of where some of these things go and such. But .NET, you know, there's always that goal for software stacks of write once and deploy it everywhere. And, you know, you have, from a UI and a native standpoint, that's tough. And there's so many things. But from a, you know, from a middleware layer, from a backend layer, from, you know, the, you know, data layer, there's so many pieces that you can do that now, that we can write middleware that sits behind, you know, four or five different stacks and, you know, native stacks. We can, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do there. So it's pretty exciting. And with .NET Core finally becoming .NET 5 and kind of wrapping up that open source rewrite of .NET, we'll see. So, I think that .NET Conf is a 3-day event, I believe. So all virtual, of course, and, looking mm-hmm. forward to it.
Yeah. And that is November 10th through 12th. We'll include that link in the show notes.
Okay.
You've gone deep in all of the native technologies, it seems, that .NET has kind of gone through. And then, I come across people who I've done .NET for a long time, but they've done all web and never done any native of any kind, no Windows development. And so to your point, it's so vast. You can do so many things. Yep. But fast forward us a few years with your breadth of experience and seeing so many things, fast forward us, you know, down the road, and where do you see things going? Like in 2007, the smartphone really came about. Yeah, we had Windows Mobile, but people weren't thinking, oh, I should develop, tons of people should develop apps for this.
Right.
You know, and so now it's normal. The smartphone is kind of, well, duh, of course you're going to have an app
right.
if you're that kind of company. But where do you see things going? And if somebody's figuring out where to invest their, you know, development R&D time for themselves over the next 5-10 years, what do you see?
Well, the biggest thing right now is still cloud development and the cloud architecture, right? So the more programs, projects and stuff I've been on lately, it's own beast. I mean, when you really start looking at distributed programming, I'm not talking about just writing up an API in .NET Core and shoving up in a VM up there. But when you really start looking at, just since we're talking Microsoft, like the Azure stack of having IoT hubs that are processing messages from IoT devices and putting them in event hubs, and those event hubs are routing things to certain different service buses with that are queued up and have service top bus topics, and Azure functions that are being queued off of things like messages showing up or time delays, and logic apps that are running the entire system, and APIs that are sitting on things that are communicating with each other, and just all the various stacks of things that you can do for a truly distributed architecture that's easy to spin up in Azure or in all web, you know, in all your platforms. I think that's going to be a lot, because your industry moves so much slower than I really expected getting into this process. I mean, you've still, well, I can't speak of what it is right now, but as of 2 years ago, 3 years ago, for the Windows stack, WinForms is still to this day the number one file.new Windows program. Was a WinForms app, simply because it was so easy to use. I mean, if you need a quick data utility program and you don't want to have to remember how to write all the console inputs and outputs, and you didn't want all the XAML to have to build up, and you just wanted to drag and drop some pieces on a form real quick and have something run, I mean, still file.new WinForms. So things just move slowly. But for, especially from a front end, because it takes, well, it takes time, it takes money, it takes user adoption and things, but the cloud gives you the ability to start expanding your resources. And that's not even touching yet things like machine learning and all the various things that you can do, you know, inside of some of these services and such that will, and the better you are at that stack and the better you are at maintaining, you know, a good knowledge base of what's available is the, and what can work and what projects and such, you know, the better you'll be as a developer. So I don't see things like, you know, I know like AR is picking up and, you know, we'll see more of that, but is that going to become an industry-wide standard like the smartphone, you know, or is everyone we walk around augmented, you know, AR glasses and such? I don't think the tech is there for it. Could it happen in 10 years? Sure. But, you know, big bulky headsets and things like that just aren't going to, you're not going to see that walking down the street. So, you know, and you're going to continue to see web, you know, web apps, you know, the stacks improve, the tooling improve, I think. And then native is always an interesting question because, as I said, there's still a ton of people out there in the industry for various reasons run native applications that run Windows applications that aren't going to go away from it. They don't want to run a web app on their machines. They want to run their systems like they have for the last 10 years, 20 years, and they'll keep adding stuff to it. And really it makes sense, and they should, if nothing else, just from a knowledge-based standpoint. So it's kind of where I think cloud's still going to continue to kind of really continue to mature. And especially when you consider how quickly it's moving right now, you know, things, and you know, when they're as young as, I mean, relatively as young as the cloud is, I mean, they just move quickly. You'll know it'll start maturing when things slow down and they're not really just banging out new services every 3 months and, you know, things aren't changing and such. So it's kind of where I think a lot of people can go. And it's a easy space to get into, really. I mean, you don't have to have design experience. You don't have to have that. And it tests your architecture chops, because it's very easy to over-architect a cloud solution. And when you start pulling all those pieces in and go, okay, we need everything in here. And, but it does work. I've been working on a project where we've got a ton of message routing. And so, I mean, we chase messages around the system through event hubs and service buses and things, and it works great, but it's a challenge to do it and to do it right. Because if you don't, then you have all kinds of messes, because it's not bugs that the compiler throws at you. It's messages that get rerouted or don't show up where they're supposed to, or, you know, don't have the content that you're wanting to drive the right workflows and all that kind of good stuff. So,
yeah. Well, when we think about what technology is going to become pervasive, certainly streaming media has become pervasive and touches everyone. If you just think about, Hulu, Sling TV, Netflix, and all, I mean, it's touched everybody who watches TV, which is, you know, certainly everybody in this country. Streaming media has become normal. And certainly there's a lot of developers who have been working in streaming media, but I wouldn't say that, 80% of developers work in streaming media technologies.
True.
And so there's this difference of, okay, here's a technology that touches all of us. And then there's the, what types of technologies are going to be needed for a whole lot of development jobs?
Right.
And you mentioned the messages and making two things talk together. It seems like integration work is one of those that drives a lot of development jobs, that there's so many different systems. They need to work together. Data needs to flow from one to the other. And there's just a whole mess of integration work.
Oh, there's a ton. That's actually, the full name of my company is Champion Data Solutions. And it was built off of the project I was working on at the time. I was a logistics company that I wrote a SOAP endpoint for. And my first 8 customers when I left that project were companies that third parties for that logistic to build the SOAP endpoint to talk to the integration point that I worked with. So, you know, that was where things started. Things haven't changed. You know, with things getting more distributed and then things getting more interconnected, I mean, it's a great world when you can, you know, people need solutions that are pulling in data from different places or are shoveling data to various places. So yeah, there's going to be a ton of that work. And then, you know, talking about the media streaming and such, you know, with the pandemic, we've got so many industries that have jumped in on that. You look at the music industry alone, you know, when you look at all the concerts and things that no longer happen, everybody has scrambled. And, you know, so now you can go on Facebook or you can see, you know, streaming services that people are spinning up. And so where they're doing virtual concerts, just trying to stay relevant, trying to earn a dollar because their, you know, their livelihood has gone away. And you're seeing that across more and more industries. I mean, you look at the speaking circuit, even for the development community and such. I mean, all conferences are done. I mean, for a while. I mean, so now it's all virtual. So you've got to bring that up. And I was talking with Beth Massey the other day on when I was talking to her, and she was, you know, she's in, you know, one of the ones getting .NET Conf off the ground. I'm like, I was telling her, like, one of the things that I see as a challenge is, you know, like if you go to, you know, a build or the mix back in the day, which is still one of my favorite conferences and such, the things that you couldn't, that you have to do, one of the hardest things I see going virtual is trying to get that energy up. Right, you'd go to these conferences and you'd be inspired. You would, you know, you'd leave there, you'd go into that Nike hall, look at all these things I can do and all that. That's a hard thing to pull off energy wise when you have people sitting here on Zooms talking to each other and, you know, and just watching another video on your TV. So, you know, so there's all aspects of that is, you know, how can you provide a platform that will help to bring that energy level up and help people to be able to do that? There's all kinds of, there'll be a ton of work in that space continues to grow. Cause even when we get back, things get back to quote normal, I think this has gone on long enough that you're going to see a lot of people who have pivoted that are going to be looking at these platforms and how to expand these platforms, whether it's for conferences or just inter team communications or entertainment. I think there's going to be a lot of that around.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. There's definitely going to be a lot of change, a lot of things that started in recent months that we haven't seen yet that are going to come out over the next year. Well, Tony, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing what's going on with the new podcast, Developers Road, and how developers can develop their career and if they might be interested in the consulting path. We appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me out.
All right. And again, check out www.azuredevops.show for past episodes and show notes. And as always, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.